Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
I mean, a lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's
not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it. Hi guys, and welcome to today's episode on fibroids uncovered.
So fibroids are these lumps, these growths that grow in the womb, in the muscle layer, which is the myometrium. And they're not cancerous, but they do have a lot of issues that come with them. Yeah. And sometimes some people have no symptoms. And the ones that we do see, they have symptoms, and that's why we see them.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're really, really common, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons we wanted to cover this. I think the stat is that by age 50, 80% of women will have some sort of fibroid change in their uterus.
I didn't know it was that common.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Really common.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean, and as Lorna said, it doesn't mean you'll know about it because you might have no symptoms. Yeah. And if you have no symptoms, that's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might find them out because you have a scan for another reason. But you might have symptoms.
Yeah.
And because it's something so common that affects so many women, it's something that we wanted to talk about on this podcast.
Of course. Just to put it into perspective, loads of people when they come and they've got, say, postmenopausal bleeding will have fibroids on a scan, and they're like, but I've got these fibroids, and you're like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, genuinely doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
So if they're not causing you any problems, they're not causing us any problems, basically. But they can cause lots of problems. So
yes,
shall we discuss what kind of fibroids you can get, and then we'll discuss about what problems they can cause?
Yeah, so mainly they're kind of classified on their location.
Yeah.
And you can go really in depth, and there can be like 9 different types.
Yes.
But just to keep it nice and easy, which I like things to be nice and simple, there's kind of 3 main types. So if we think back to our anatomy of our womb, it's got kind of like 3 layers.
Yep.
You've got the inside, which is the endometrial lining, so the endometrium, the bit that's shed when you have a period. Then you have the kind of chunky muscle layer, which is called the myometrium.
Yep.
And then just on the outside, you've got this sort of layer, which is a protective layer that's called the serosa.
We should have brought the womb with us.
Yeah. Well, visualise this womb.
Alison's flowing.
This is also large. It's bigger than it should be.
It's got fibroids.
It's got fibroids, yeah. So you can have fibroids that grow sort of encroaching on the endometrium, so they come into the cavity.
Yep.
They're called submucous.
So they distort the lining of the womb sometimes.
Yep.
So if you look at them on a scan, when you're looking at a scan, usually the lining of your womb is kind of a straight line on a scan because it's 2D. But if you have a fibroid, they can be distorting the lining of your womb if they're submucous. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of going into the lining of the womb.
Like impinge into the cavity, basically,
yeah.
And they can grow in. And they can be various sizes. Then you can have intramural fibroids, so they're fibroids that grow in the muscle. So intramural, basically think in the muscle. They grow inside the myometrium. And then you can also have a third type, which grow on the outside of the womb.
Yeah.
So these are kind of either called like subserosal, so just under that outside layer that we mentioned. And you can also have pedunculated, which means that it's kind of like attached to the outside of the womb,
on
but
a
very
stalk?
Separate.
I like
on
that
a stalk.
Word,
yeah.
Pedunculated.
Yeah. It's a good word.
Sounds I always think of peninsula.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like on a stalk, so they look like separate beings to the womb.
Yeah.
But they can be very large, separate beings to the womb.
Like a womb twin.
Yeah. How large when we say very large?
They can be huge.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, so obviously like for my project we collect them, and some people get told they're like 40 week size. And I was like, what does this mean, 40 out of 40? And it's like, oh, that's the size of a fully grown baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And watermelons and things like that. Yeah.
And it's very rare that somebody would have one fibroid.
Yeah.
If they've got one, they've usually got quite a few fibroids, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's uncommon for them to be that big.
Yeah, they can be like golf ball size.
They can be like peas.
Mm-hmm. And when we say this, are they always round or can they be like strips?
No, usually, so a fibroid is usually kind of like a round thing. But you can also get fibroid change in the muscle layer of the womb, which is where on the, like on a scan, it looks a bit fibrous. It looks a bit more tough.
I was going to say less fibroidy.
Fibroidy. It looks a bit less like, you know, healthy muscle and a bit more like a tough, fibrousy scar tissue-y kind of bit.
And they are quite tough, aren't fibrous?
They do tend to be.
Because I've heard you mention before when you have
trying
to
chop them off is hard work. Yeah.
This is not inside someone. This is for research.
Yeah. Not qualified to do it inside someone.
But they are. They are like tough. They are like so fibrous tissue, so like scar tissue. So if you imagine that is tougher than a nice healthy muscle.
Yeah, okay. Agree. So they're very common. We just said lots and lots of people will find them as an incidental finding. So they've gone for one thing and come out with, oh my gosh, I've got fibroids. But if they're incidental, as in they're not causing you any problems, then we are also not concerned about them. They are a very common thing to have. Mm-hmm. If you've gone with that they're causing you a problem, then that's a different scenario. Mm-hmm. They're most frequently occur in people aged 30 to 50 because they're estrogen driven. So they grow with estrogen. So you've got estrogen kind of obviously when you're having cycles, this kind of provokes the fibroids basically.
But can you still find them in postmenopausal women?
Yeah. So they don't just disappear, but they shouldn't be getting bigger when you're postmenopausal. Okay. And they're most common in certain different people from different backgrounds. So Afro-Caribbean origin would be a lot more common than white Caucasian.
Yeah. And it's weird because we don't really know why. Like so first of all, we don't really know why fibroids grow. So they are... It's like an overgrowth of the muscle. It just, for some reason, some of the cells there start to grow more and then form a fibroid. No one really knows exactly why.
Yeah.
We know what they are. We know what makes them grow sometimes more, like with estrogen. And we know in who they're more common, but we don't really know what triggers them and why they start to grow. But we also don't know why it's more common in certain ethnicities as well.
So fibroids are defined as being non-cancerous. Mm-hmm. Can they turn cancerous?
Yes, but in a very, very small subset of people.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to be concerned if they've got fibroids, basically. It's a really, really tiny subset of people that you would have a fibroid that would be a cancer.
Yeah. So it's called, it's got a really good long name.
Go on, Alison.
Leiomyosarcoma. Yeah. So another word for fibroid is leoma.
Lioma,
which is obviously the one I don't use very often, so I'm like... a fibroid can become cancerous, but it's very, very rare. Like, it's one of the most rare cancers in women. You'd be suspicious of a fibroid being cancerous if it grew really quickly.
Like, really fast.
So in most fibroids, they might grow a bit, but they shouldn't grow massively. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be more, like, in postmenopausal women than premenopausal women.
Yeah. So what symptoms do they cause?
Lorna,
take it away. So I think the most common one is like they cause pelvic pain because obviously like if they are large, they're pushing on everything else, that causes pain. They can cause heavy menstrual bleeding, especially I think if it's the ones that go into your uterus and upset that endometrium, can change the way you're bleeding. Lower back pain, same idea with the pressure. Urination and toilet issues. Both ends. I don't know how to say that.
No, you did. You kind of got like constipation. If they're big, then you get all of those pressure symptoms.
All of those are pressure symptoms. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the whole, they won't cause pressure symptoms unless they're big.
Yeah.
So if you've got a small fibroid, if it's 2 centimeters, it's 3 centimeters, it ain't going to be causing pressure symptom issues.
Or pain. It's very
it's just
unlikely
to they're
cause
quite
pain.
Inert in a sense. They're just
and that's mainly
there.
People that don't know they've got them. As
yeah. Yeah.
These symptoms that you've listed are also quite comorbid with other
everything
symptoms
else.
Or other conditions, which might make it quite
also
difficult.
Pregnancy. So, and it kind of fits in with that. If you do have a massive fibroid that is like the size of a melon or the size of a baby, if you imagine, you probably will have pressure on your bladder, so you probably will have the urge to go. You probably will have some back pain because you're carrying around this extra weight in your abdomen, which is changing your way that your back is structured. And you probably will have some pain because that's going to be pressing on nerves and things.
Mm-hmm. I think the issue that most people have would be heavy periods.
Yeah.
So people can have really heavy periods if they've got fibroids, and especially these fibroids that are in the lining of the womb. Mm-hmm. And we can do something about that. So if, as we said in all of the different episodes, advocate for yourself. If your periods are really very heavy, go and see someone, have a scan, have a think about different treatment options.
Yeah.
So fibroids can cause lots of issues, especially with bleeding, sometimes with pressure, sometimes with fertility. Mm-hmm. So they can cause problems with fertility in lots of different ways. So if you have a fibroid that's kind of blocking your fallopian tubes, you ain't going to get pregnant because it's blocked the entrance to your womb. So that could be one of the problems. Mm-hmm. The other issue is that they can distort the cavity. So we want your endometrial cavity to be kind of nice and regular. So that's your endometrium, the lining of your womb that sheds every month. We want that to be nice and regular, not have a fibroid in it. So that can potentially stop someone from getting pregnant. And there's a theory that there's kind of quite a lot of inflammation there when you've got these fibroids there as well. So there's quite a lot of... overlap with fertility and fibroids. Mm-hmm. So that's also something to be aware of, I think.
Yeah. But then again, with that, with everything with fibroids, I suppose it depends on the size.
Yeah, so size and location.
Generally speaking, if it is a small fibroid, so if it's less than 3 centimetres, and it's a submucous fibroid and, you know, changing the shape of the cavity, but less than 3 centimetres in size, it shouldn't actually be affecting your fertility.
Yeah.
But if it's bigger than 3 centimetres, then evidence suggests that it might be, so definitely worth treating.
Mm-hmm. And if fibroids are outside your womb but they're bigger than 6 centimetres, we think that they might affect your fertility as well.
Yeah.
So there are like these little cut-offs, but also we know that people might have larger or smaller ones and get pregnant, no issues.
Yeah.
And you see people further on in pregnancy that have massive fibroids, and they go into preterm labour or they're unable to deliver, because if they have a big fibroid and their body thinks that they're ready to deliver because they've got this large pressure, then they could have a preterm labour. Or you could have a big fibroid that's now at the top of your cervix, mm-hmm. which means that they wouldn't be able to deliver vaginally. So there's lots of issues that can happen at different points mm-hmm. if you do get pregnant, as well as not being able to get pregnant. I think, again, back to that whole, we've discussed it in various episodes, but having a fibroid remove probably in most people's situations won't make a pregnancy be like, oh, right, well, we can get pregnant now because we've had that fibroid removed. We're not sure that the correlation is that strong that you would need it removed before you can get pregnant. When you're, for example, going through IVF, because we know that every embryo we put back is much less precious, we've gotten a lot to get to that embryo, we would want to make the lining of the womb as optimised as possible. So a lot of times people would be advised to have fibroids in the lining of the womb removed. But on a day-to-day kind of normal basis, we know that people get pregnant with fibroids all the time, so we wouldn't kind of advocate people having fibroids ad hoc removed unless they're causing you issues.
Yeah.
When you are pregnant and say you're having your ultrasound scan, would you be able to see fibroids on the scan?
Yeah.
Okay, and if you saw fibroids, would the doctor tell you? Oh, you do have fibroids.
The person who's scanning you would comment on everything they see. So if they see a fibroid, they'll see it, they'll measure it, they'll say where it is. And then if it's over a certain size, you might be referred to a doctor just to chat through in pregnancy any of those risks that Nick's mentioned that might happen to you and how to prevent them or like mitigate them a bit. But also a lot of the time, if you're having a scan, you just have to say what you see. It might not have an impact on your pregnancy anyway, but you would monitor it and check it doesn't get bigger, check it doesn't cause any problems.
I think it is important for people to know what fibroids are, because obviously not everyone does know what they are. Mm-hmm. And if I was sat and didn't know what a fibroid was and was having a ultrasound and the doctor's like, okay, it looks like you've got some fibroids, I'd be like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Am I going to die?
Especially the association with the word like tumour. You then think cancer, but it's like, no, these actually aren't.
That's a good point with the word tumour, because I think for a lot of people tumour means cancer.
They're like the same word,
but it doesn't always mean cancerous. It can just, tumour just means growth.
It's a funky little one.
But I think growth sounds a lot more kind and less aggressive than tumour does.
So it's
I think it's just because what you've been taught, like
the way we use the word most of the time.
Yeah,
I think a lot of times in pregnancy we see a fibroid at the first scan when the pregnancy is small and we can see everything. But when a pregnancy gets larger, unless the fibroid is really big, we don't usually see them very easily.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that they're like, has my fibroid gone? And you're like, probably not.
Probably not.
But we just can't see it because it's behind the baby or it's like...
Yeah.
So it should shouldn't affect labour. I think mm-hmm. we're just worried more about people that have got large fibroids that we yeah. worry that they will be able to labour, or that they would have a bleed after labour because mm-hmm. their womb wouldn't contract down properly, yeah. which we need it to do.
And that's the kind of same reason that it can cause heavy periods. So your womb needs to be able to contract. So in like the muscle layer of your womb, you've got different... you've got like muscle fibers that are going in different directions, yeah. so mm-hmm. it squeezes together really nicely,
yep.
so when you're on your period, you want your womb to be able to squeeze down nicely so that it stops the bleeding. If you've got something in your womb that stops it contracting down properly, yep. then that bleeding can carry on.
Mm-hmm.
Same with after a baby. So you've delivered your baby, you're like, whew, get the placenta out, and then your womb is like, finally, this is over for me,
yeah.
starts to collapse down. But if there's a big fibroid there, it can't contract down effectively, yeah. and then you can bleed kind of past it.
Yeah. And so say if you've got these symptoms, you've got your heavy bleeding, your pain, and you think it could be fibroids. So you go to the doctors, you say, I think I might have fibroids, or I've got these symptoms, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
What would they do?
Okay. So as we said, fibroids can quite effectively be picked up on an ultrasound mm-hmm. scan.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be the first investigation that you would do to check. You could be examined as well. So when we do a vaginal examination and feel on your tummy as well, when we're talking about this 40 weeks thing, mm-hmm. that's how we measure how big a womb is. Excuse me. So if you have an examination and you feel that the top of the womb is up to your tummy button, then that would be 20 weeks.
Oh yeah,
we
said
so
that.
You, we discussed that before in a previous episode.
Yeah.
So you could kind of work out how big the womb is by examination, but to work out where the fibroids are and potentially what treatment they may need,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you would need an ultrasound scan, and sometimes you would need an MRI as well. An MRI can really define exactly where they are, because sometimes on an ultrasound scan, it's difficult because they're so big, or there's mm-hmm. so many of them that you can't work out exactly where they are and how to kind of map what surgery you think that they yeah. might need.
Mm-hmm.
So ultrasound, MRI examination.
Yeah. And also if you go into your doctor because you've got heavy bleeding, they might book you an investigation for it, but it should also talk to you about things that they can do to treat you straight yeah, away, because yeah. there are things that you can have to treat the symptom of your fibroid, but then you might need a scan to have a look at if you need any surgical treatment or anything else as well.
Mm-hmm.
So don't suffer in silence.
No.
Treatment while you're waiting.
A lot of people are just going on the pill, the contraceptive pill, which mm-hmm. we've discussed before, and about like trying to stop periods is a good option for mm-hmm. people with fibroids, because if we can stop your periods, then we should yeah. be stopping this heavy bleeding.
Yeah. And yeah. what about people who are postmenopausal?
So they shouldn't be having bleeding.
They don't have the bleeding.
No. Yeah.
But if they have other symptoms like the pain and the pressure.
Yeah, so it would be uncommon for them to develop those if they've not had them before,
right.
Because this shouldn't be growing, because it's mm-hmm. estrogen driven. So if that's the case, then we get more concerned, because your womb shouldn't be growing when you're postmenopausal, basically.
Yeah. But if you're someone who's postmenopausal and you've got pressure symptoms and you've had a scan that shows a fibroid, then you'd have a chat about what treatment would be best for that fibroid.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the caveat that like it might just be an incidental finding and it might not be causing you symptoms. It could be yeah. something else.
Yeah.
But the treatment would be different. So treatment depends on what your symptom is,
yeah.
where your fibroid is, but also you and what's important to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're someone that's like premenopausal, heavy periods, you've got a scan that showed there's a 5 centimetre fibroid, you could have something like hormone treatments to help reduce the bleeding. And then you could also have some treatment, which we'll go on to describe, like surgical treatments for the fibroid as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, so I think, as you've just said, it depends what your symptom is.
Yeah.
So if
yeah.
you've gone with heavy periods, then we need to think about, is there any fibroid in the lining of your mm-hmm. womb that's distorting the lining of the womb? So if that's the case, you could go on to have a procedure to remove the fibroid from the lining of the womb. And this can happen with you awake or asleep. And we're going to discuss this further in one of our other episodes. And this is called hysteroscopy and then removal of the fibroid. So that's one of the things that we can do. So if the fibroid is in the cavity by the endometrium, then we can remove that for you.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, a lot of the times when we take the top off the fibroid, if it's just partially into the cavity, we can remove as much as possible, but then often you would need a repeat procedure because the fibroid kind of gets then like pushed even more into the cavity. So yeah. we won't have removed it all. Mm-hmm. So you would need like a second procedure.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we can do. if you're having kind of other symptoms, so if you're having pressure symptoms or you're not being able to get pregnant, you've got really large fibroids, then we can think about removing the fibroids in something called a myomectomy. So a myomectomy is quite a big procedure and has the risk of heavy bleeding because we're kind of opening the womb to kind of shell out these circles of fibroids and then close the womb back up again.
And this is an abdominal procedure rather than a vaginal. Mm-hmm. So the hysteroscopy you can do without having a scar on your tummy. That's just done through your vagina, through your womb.
The myomectomy would go through your tummy.
And it can be a keyhole or an open operation. And it would depend on the size and the location of the fibroid.
Yeah. So it's a much bigger procedure. And when you're signing a consent for this, obviously there's risk with everything and this is a risky procedure. You would be signing to say that if you were bleeding and you were bleeding heavily, then you would be having a hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. So if you're somebody who's young, you've not had children, you would like to consider having children, you have to, you really have to have that a very frank, open discussion with the surgeon to ensure that this is the right procedure for you at the right time. And it might be because you're having it done because of fertility, and if that's the case, then pros, cons, risks, you have to weigh them all up and make the right decision for you. But it's not something to be taken lightly. A myomectomy, and then obviously you can have a hysterectomy, which is to remove the womb. If you're removing the womb, you don't have to have your ovaries removed. So if you've got loads of large fibroids, they're causing all of the symptoms, and you finish your family, then you can have the womb removed. You wouldn't have periods anymore because you've not got your womb, so nothing will be shedding, but you would have the hormones because you would keep your ovaries.
Okay. And is there, can people also do that but get rid of the ovaries as well?
Yeah, you can, but we wouldn't recommend to do that, especially if you're less than 45, because you need your estrogen for lots of good stuff.
Ovaries are good. Yeah. Generally, if they're behaving themselves, they're working well, you want to keep them for as long as they are working, because it's the estrogen that they produce that is good for women's health in general. So if you were 35 and you were having a hysterectomy because you don't want kids or you've had your kids and you've got fibroids, it wouldn't be a good idea to have your ovaries removed as well, because that would actually shorten your life expectancy.
Okay.
But if you were 49,
yeah,
you might as well think about having them removed at the same time.
Yeah. It's just going to put you in a surgical menopause if you have your ovaries removed, which is a shock to the system. And you're also going to need to have HRT for kind of a bone health to ensure that you are looking after yourself until menopausal age.
Okay, and this can be so in like 30s, so before you would be menopausal.
So often it would be recommended that you had your womb removed and not your ovaries.
So that, we focus quite a lot on the surgical management, which is really effective for fibroids, but you might be someone that A, doesn't want surgery, or they might just be quite small fibroids, they're causing you symptoms, but they're not really big enough to go through the risks of surgery. So you can have, so with everything, with female health problems, hormones is the way to treat it. If, so if you're a premenopausal person and you are bleeding and you have a fibroid, hormones are something to try. So that might be the pill, it might be an injection to sort of dampen down your hormonal axis, and then maybe you don't have estrogen being produced.
So
you
with
could have a Mirena coil.
With the injection, a lot of people will have the injection before they have surgery as well, because the injection can shrink the fibroids and make them less vascular before you operate on them, so less blood supply before you operate on them.
Okay, so they are vascular.
Yeah.
Does that mean there's veins inside the fibroids?
No, they have a blood supply.
Blood supply. But so they don't have to, not veins.
Yeah. But they have a good blood supply because they're in the muscle, and the muscles, like, you know, everywhere in your body, muscles really well vascularized. It has a good blood supply, so it's the same in the womb.
Okay.
So you could potentially have the injection before you have the surgery. Sometimes people have the injections as like a bit of a respite so that they can have a time off their bleeding. If the cavity is regular and not too big, so there are caveats to the Mirena in this situation. I am a Mirena advocate.
It doesn't work for everyone with fibroids.
I'm a Mirena advocate. We've discussed this before, but it doesn't work for everybody with fibroids if you've got a very large cavity, which sometimes people do have if they've got lots of fibroids. It's not going to work. And also if the cavity is really very distorted because of fibroids coming into the cavity, again, not going to work.
Not it's not for everyone.
I suppose in a sense, though, there are some people that it doesn't work completely, but it helps. So there's always options with things. And it's one of those kind of
open discussion situations to find out what's best.
Yeah. And also with fibroids that are symptomatic, if they cause heavy bleeding, lots of people will be anemic mm-hmm. with fibroids yeah. with heavy bleeding. And so it's really important to treat that as well. So yeah. iron. Yeah. In various different forms.
Iron. So,
yeah.
Iron.
I think that's kind of, was that most of the things that we wanted to cover with fibroids?
Yeah, I think so.
See if we've got some questions.
Yeah, well, we definitely got questions, didn't we?
I think it's because they're so common, like...
Yeah.
And again, a massive incidental finding situation, isn't it? Yeah. People get worried about them.
Mm-hmm. I really didn't know they were that common.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. I think it's so important we talk about it, because even, like, I didn't know my cousin had fibroids until I, like, posted on my Insta story about my PhD, and she was like, oh my god, I just had a hysterectomy, and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So, like, do you know what I mean? I think we do need to talk about them more.
Yeah, and you're doing an entire PhD on
this. 4 whole years.
So, can fibroids grow back once they've been removed?
Yeah, and this is the really, not annoying, because that's probably not the right word, but...
it's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really tricky, because, yes, they're estrogen-driven, yes, they can grow back, and if you have one and you've had them removed, you're probably going to get more.
If you are postmenopausal and have one removed, is it still going to have a chance of growing back?
No, it's less likely to grow back, because obviously if you're postmenopausal... You don't have as much. You have some estrogen, but not as much as you had when you were premenopausal. Yeah. But this is a thing with, you know, if women are postmenopausal and on hormone replacement therapy.
I was just going to say that.
Part of that is estrogen. There is the worry that that estrogen component will promote the growth of a fibroid. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean you can't have HRT if you have a fibroid. It very much depends on the size, the problems you're having. But it might be that you want to reduce the estrogen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So talking about fertility and fibroids and timings with regards to pregnancies, it can be pertinent to kind of ensure that if you're having a fibroid removed, we're thinking about when we're planning a pregnancy, because if we're thinking that maybe in 2 or 3 years time you're going to be back to where you were before you had the fibroid removed, potentially, like, is that timing
correct?
Is it
the right
time?
One of the questions we had that I think we have sort of covered is, where are the fibroids and how large can they be? And we've said they're in that myometrial layer, and they can be massive. Tiny to massive. It totally
from a
depends.
Pea to a massive baby.
Yeah.
Can fibroids cause complications if they're left untreated?
No, on the whole.
Yeah, generally no. But, you know, if you're already having symptoms of the fibroids and they're big, then that could cause problems for you. You could become anemic if you're bleeding. But, yeah, if you've got a little fibroid that's there and it's not causing you problems and you leave it alone, it's not going to cause any problems.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't know you've got it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've just thought that we've not covered, you can get degeneration of a fibroid. So when we talk about pain...
Kind of.
Yeah. They can kind of die and become like necrotic, but it can cause lots of pain.
It's like as if they've outgrown their blood supply. Yeah. So it's like they're massive, they need all this blood. It happens more commonly in pregnancy than outside of pregnancy. But then because it's run out of its blood supply, it starts to sort of degenerate, so the tissue starts to die because it's not getting enough oxygen.
Yeah.
And that can be really painful, like Nick was saying.
If it died, would it like drop out?
No.
It's got nowhere to go. It's like inside.
It's like stuck. Yeah.
So it's like having dying tissue inside your body that would be painful.
Yeah. So you probably
can get rid of that?
Well, it would stop dying and then the pain would go.
Yeah.
As in, like, it would be dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
It's not very... It's unlikely to happen.
Yeah, it's unlikely, but it can cause a lot of pain when people do have that. The other thing is, and I know we're skipping backwards here, but we haven't discussed that you can have radiological procedures to try and shrink fibroids as well.
Yeah, we missed that.
Yeah.
So what do you mean by radiological?
So you can have... So if you have a fibroid in the womb that's... You've seen it, and as well as having a hysteroscopy, which was the camera inside to remove it, you can have ultrasound, like focused ultrasound treatment. So you are doing an ultrasound, you can see where the fibroid is, and then you can target it with like heat waves or other things to try and help shrink it down.
Yeah. So that's newer treatment, and you can have uterine artery embolization that's performed by the radiologists. Mm-hmm. So they're the doctors that look at scans, so like CT scans, MRI scans, that kind of thing, but they do interventions as well. Mm-hmm. So they do uterine artery embolization. So that's to kind of shrink fibroids, but they kind of say to not have that if you still want to have a pregnancy, because it might affect the blood supply as well.
Yeah.
Some people have gone on
to have pregnancies after, but it's not like first line if you want to have a pregnancy, but it's something that can be thought about as well.
One of our other questions is about like if there's an early sign or symptom, and I think it's that idea that if you get a symptom and you want to get it checked out, you will.
Yeah.
Because it's like everything else. It's the pain, it's the bleeding.
Yeah. I think it's not something that you need to be thinking about screening for. Because as we've said on the whole, nothing needs to be done about it.
We also have some interesting myths that we found.
Yeah, go on.
TikTok has really
come in here.
come in handy here. So one of them that we found was that fibroids is always caused by a buildup of toxic waste.
This
is one of those things where you've really got to be careful what you're believing that you see online, because it was a doctor's post, they were wearing scrubs, and it was like they had a doctor in the title of their account, and they were saying because it's near to the bowel and the intestines, it's the toxic waste from that ends up going down into your womb. And I was like, so I sent it to Lorna, I saw this last night, and I was like,
it is spread in this day and age.
And all the comments are like, oh my goodness, I'm so glad I know this, like this is so enlightening.
Like, this is 100% true. I'm glad that you've informed us of this, because my doctor didn't tell me this.
What is
toxic waste in your bowel?
I think they meant poo.
Right, well, poo's normal.
Also, if poo is leaking out of your bowel, well, then that is really not good.
Bigger problem than fibroids. Fibroids are like not related to your bowels. No. They grow spontaneously. Mm-hmm. We don't know why they grow, but it's not toxic waste.
But wait for this one.
Oh, okay, there's more.
There's more. So fibroids are caused by a denial of femininity and the rejection of the feminine principle.
Imagine if we were like, guys.
Oh, that is true.
This video did say that the only way you can get rid of your fibroids is by affirmations of femininity. So by going, I am feminine.
Do you know, I think if that worked, people would be so happy, because that's so much easier than surgery.
I mean, like, it is great.
But
they said that fibroids are caused by a masculine energy. So it did make me laugh. There was a comment on this video and someone had said, well, this makes a lot of sense. My mum has fibroids and she's started growing beard hair. And I was like, how is this making sense to you?
So fibroids are like they're driven by estrogen, which is very much a female hormone, as we know. Men have it too, but like it is a female hormone.
So it
hormone.
Actually couldn't be more wrong.
No. Yeah. I feel like this is so worrying, because it's like, you know, we don't know everything yet about medicine and diseases, but we have a hell of a lot of knowledge. We've come a long way since like the dark days of like
the wandering Greek womb.
Wandering womb, where like you can blame a growth of something on your feminine or masculine energy. Yeah, that just screams like
craziness.
Misinformation.
You can't find the word.
Yeah. What are you supposed to think? Again, like, am I too masculine? Is that why I've given myself a fibroid?
It was a viral video with lots of likes, lots of comments.
That is just harmful.
I sent all these to Lorna the other day, and we were like, what on earth is this?
It's crazy. And the comments are the scariest bit, because everybody's agreeing with it and saying, like, oh my God, I'm so glad I know this now. And you're just please don't.
So, stitch incoming.
Any others? Any other myths?
Although they were great. They were the best ones.
Definitely. Yeah. Interesting. Probably not caused by your feminine or masculine energy.
Or your toxic waste.
Your toxic waste.
I think that's kind of what we wanted to cover.
Yes.
Probably slightly in a random order, but we're just going to go with it.
So quick disclaimer. As always, these are our opinions. They're not affiliated with where we work, and this shouldn't be taken as medical advice.
Yeah, and please make sure you're following us wherever you're listening to this podcast.
And on all of our social medias at Between Two Ovaries.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you for our next episode.
Thanks.